It is very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. I do want to talk about voting abroad. I got a very interesting message from a guy who's living in Boston with his family for the last 3 years, and he's quite angry. He said he came home to vote in the last referendum because he was coming home with his business anyway, but he feels he should be able to vote abroad. Now, we don't know the exact number of Irish citizens abroad. Look, if you're talking about expats, it could be between 60 and 80 million. But realistically, holding an Irish passport and being a citizen is the one thing that should entitle you to vote. We're very unique in this country. We're one of only three countries in Europe that don't allow you to vote abroad. But there could be anywhere up to 2 million people holding an Irish passport anywhere in the world at this present time. So that would definitely affect the voting when it comes to particularly referendums. So should we allow Irish people to vote abroad? That's the question I'm asking today, and I want you to text on 085 100 2255. That's 085 100 2255. There's an argument for that they're Irish citizens and they should be involved, you know, in what happens in this country. But the argument against is, well, they pissed off, didn't they? I mean, they don't really care, and that doesn't really affect them if they're going to stay in Spain or America or other parts of Europe or whatever it happens to be. The voting, the referendum choices or the general election choices for 5 years are probably not going to affect them. So why should they be allowed to vote? So there are two arguments for this. Now, voting is very important, of course. And on June the 7th, you are going to have an opportunity in this country to vote, not only in the EU elections, but because you heard my ad at the start, of course. That's the joys of doing a podcast. I don't have to be impartial. But you can also vote in the local elections too for your local councillors. And of course, before the end of the year, most likely in November, I would imagine, you're going to have an opportunity to change the government of this country where you will vote in a general election. But how do you vote? Because people think, well, it's an easy thing, isn't it? You just walk in, you just tick your box or whatever, write your number down, and it's that simple. But it's not really that simple. And there's a lot of myths going around. So let's just try and dispel some of these myths today. John McGurk joins me from Grip Media. John, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Niall. How are you?
John, now you wrote a piece. What kind of drove you to write the piece that you wrote in Grip to the local and EU elections, a guide to using your vote? There are myths going around, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people really just don't seem to understand how to cast their vote. I saw one of your fellow candidates in Ireland South the other day. I know you're not running in Ireland South, you're running in Dublin. But he posted this tweet in which he said, I want you to vote for me one, and then he named another candidate number two, and then give no transfers after that because you're only helping other people get elected. And that's just completely wrong. And it says to me, if you're a candidate and you're telling people stuff like that and you don't understand how the voting system works, then you probably shouldn't be running. So how the voting system works is as follows, Niall. We use a system called single transferable vote. That means that you have one vote, but it can transfer between candidates. And you're asked on the ballot paper to rank the candidates in order of your preference. So that means that if for argument's sake, Niall Boylan is your favourite candidate, you give him your number one. I'm sure you won't contradict me in saying that. But then,
yeah, but I know you have your impartiality. So if you want to call Niall Boylan Joe Bloggs, I don't mind. But remember, yeah, Niall Boylan is Joe Bloggs.
But whoever your candidate is, you vote for them number one. And then you might have somebody who you like, but not quite as much, and you give them a number two. And you keep going. You can go the whole way down the ballot, or you can stop when you don't care anymore. But what's really important to know is that when your vote is actually being counted in the count centre, the person who will get your vote is always the person who is the highest ranked person on your ballot paper who is still in contention. So let's say you vote for Joe Bloggs number one, and Joe Bloggs is eliminated on the first count. He doesn't get enough votes to proceed. He's the bottom ranked candidate. Your next preference, your second preference, will then get that vote, and it will be counted the exact same as if it was a number one. And then if your second preference goes out, it goes to your third preference. And that vote will only go to the highest ranked person on your ballot paper who is still in the election. That's really important. So sometimes I hear people say things like, oh, you know, Simon Harris got elected on the 15th count and your ninth preference could elect Simon Harris. That is true, but it's only true if you have given Simon Harris a higher preference on your ballot paper than somebody else who's still in the election, and nobody higher than that is still in the election. So that's really important to know. You can't accidentally elect Simon Harris, or indeed Niall Boylan, or indeed John McGurk, by ranking us number 11 and saying, oh, well, I didn't intend to elect them. It was accidentally done. That's not how it works. That person only gets your vote if there's somebody else who you actually thought, well, I prefer Simon Harris or John McGurk or Niall Boylan to that person. So that's really important.
Okay, so this myth that goes around that, yeah, okay, I'm going to go in and let's say I want to vote for Niall Boylan, right? And I'm going to give, but I'm not gonna, I don't want anyone else to get the position, so I'm not going to vote for anyone else. And then people say, oh, well, no, don't do that, because if you don't put anyone else down your sheet, the government gets your vote. And that's a kind of myth that's being perpetrated as well at the moment.
Yeah, that's complete rubbish. So, you know, candidates can only get your vote if you've put somebody below them on the ballot paper. So the best way to think about this is it's always a contest between two people, right? So when you vote, say, Joe Bloggs 1 and Josephine Bloggs 2, Joe Bloggs gets your vote, but it's ahead of the number two person. And then when the number one person goes out, your vote goes to the number two person, and she's in a competition with the number three person, and so on and so forth. So it's always ranking one person ahead of another. So how I vote often is I will go down. I'm voting in Ireland South this time. I think there are 23 candidates on the ballot paper. I already
25,
know
25. I think actually. I think it's 25. There's a record now at this stage, isn't there? 25 candidates 20, in South.
25. Yeah,
for five seats.
So I think I'm not going to vote the whole way down for the first time in my life. But
yeah.
I already know, let's say, who my top three are going to be, and I already know who the next three after that are going to be.
Are you
going to
tell
and
us?
And then probably. No, because then I'd be shot, wouldn't I? But then I'll tell you. Then I'm probably going to go through. After that, it'll be any independent who I haven't already voted for will be getting my vote after my top six, say. And then I look at who's left on the ballot paper. And what I'll usually do in that situation, just fixing my headphones now, is I will decide. Well, who do I not want to get elected? And so, for example, and this won't be a secret to anyone who reads what I write, I'll always put a bunch of people in before the people before profit candidate. Because as far as I'm concerned, if it comes down to that last seat and it's a choice between, say, a Fianna Fáil candidate and a people before profit candidate, I actually do care who wins that seat. I'd much prefer to have a sort of centrist politician in that seat than the people before profit guy. So that's how to think about it. You're not, and if that case, my vote might actually be used to elect a Fianna Fáiler, but that will only happen if all the people I voted way ahead of him have already been elected or eliminated.
Yeah, in other words, it's unlikely that the Fianna Fáiler will ever get your vote. In other words, in that point, yeah. It's unlikely they'll ever get it. So you're going to fill the whole sheet. So, I mean, is it ever advisable just to put one down? So, in other words, put number one down beside Niall Boylan or Joe Bloggs. Is that ever advisable just to do that?
Well, it's legal. That's the first thing to say. Your vote is valid so long as there is a clear first preference. But the important thing to remember is that your first preference is literally only counted in the first count. So if I mark Joe Bloggs number one on my ballot paper, then that goes into his pile on the first count. And if he's elected on the first count, great. Or if he's in contention the whole way through, great. But if he happens to get only, say, 20 votes and he's eliminated on the first count, then basically your say over the rest of the election goes with it. You no longer have a say because you haven't said, well, if my guy doesn't get it, this is who I want to get it instead. And that's the option your vote gives you. And if you're entirely free and you're within your rights not to choose that option, but understand why you're doing that. If you're doing it because you think choosing other options will somehow help, you know, candidates you don't like get elected, then that's just wrong. If you're doing it because you genuinely only like one guy and genuinely couldn't care who else gets elected, then that's fine. But don't do it because you misunderstand the vote.
And your preferences for second, third and fourth. So let's say you vote for your Joe Bloggs at number one and the quota, say, for the EU elections. Let's say it's 70,000 votes based on how many people vote, how many candidates there are, how many seats, there's four seats. So your Joe Bloggs gets 110,000 votes. So now we have 40,000 votes spare. So those particular votes, are they going to then go to the second preferences then, you know, on that sheet because Joe Bloggs has already got through, he's got his seat, he's covered, he's got a 70,000 plus one vote. So those second and third preferences, is that where they come in valuable as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is what's called a surplus. So I'm going to explain this very quickly so that people understand how this works technically. In order to get elected in public in proportional representational single transferable vote, you have to achieve as a candidate something called the quota. This is basically a mathematical formula of votes that would say you're guaranteed to fulfill proportionately one quarter of the electorate if there's four seats or one fifth of it if there's five. So basically that formula is the total number of valid votes cast divided by the total number of seats plus one and with one vote added on. You don't really need to understand it, but that's what the quota is. But if a candidate gets over the quota, then they are said to have a surplus. And those additional votes, so in your example, the quota is 70,000, somebody gets 110,000. Those additional 40,000 votes are then available to be transferred. Now, how are those votes chosen? How do you know which of the 110,000 votes become the 40,000 votes that are transferred? They literally just pick the top 40,000 votes off the pile. So it's a completely random order. It happens in, it depends on what order the boxes are counted in and all the rest of it. And the reason they do that, Niall, is very simple. Because if they do it any other way, they could actually impact preferences later on in the count. So your third preference, they could distort third preferences and fourth preferences and so on. So what they do is they just pick a random sample of votes. And people think, oh, is that fair? It actually is fair, because if you think of, let's say 110,000 people vote for, you know, Joe Bloggs, they are likely, if they're all agreed on the first candidate they're voting for, they are likely to have a substantial consensus for their second and third preferences. People are very similar. And also, out of any sample of 110,000 votes, 40,000 is statistically representative. So that's why they do that. If you're not one of those votes that's selected, then your vote just goes. That's it. You've elected your candidate, and you've had that right, and then move on. The surplus is only distributed if it can make a difference between the last two candidates at the bottom. So, for example, if I'm coming last and I have 1,000 votes, and then there is somebody who is coming second last and they have 2,000 votes, distributing that surplus could jump me ahead of the person who's not coming last and keep me in the race. So that's how it works.
In relation to what we're talking about today, by the way, just your own personal view, and I don't know if you've ever written on this in the past. I know many of the papers have, because there was a suggestion back in 2019, I think it came up in the Oireachtas, there was a bill proposed or put forward for the Irish voting abroad. We still are we're reasonably unique, one of three countries who don't allow it in Europe. And we do have a big diaspora, of course, across the world. Now, whether they still hold Irish passports or not is a different kettle of fish. It's hard, and I've Googled it and Googled it and Googled it to get an actual figure of the amount of people who hold an Irish passport around the world. The figure is anywhere between 1 and 3 million. The figure, by the way, of the Irish diaspora is 60 to 80 million, but 1 in 3 million, which could make a very, you know, have a very different result on an EU election or on a... by the way, if you're from the EU, you can vote anywhere in the EU in the EU elections, by the way. But if you're if it's a general election or referendum or presidential election, it could make a very big difference having an extra 1.5-2 million votes. So do you believe they should be allowed to vote?
No, absolutely not. I'll tell you why. It's very simple. If I go out and vote in these local elections for my local councillor, and my local councillor is terrible, and I've made a terrible mistake, and I've elected somebody who's a terrible local councillor, then I have to live with that. I actually bear the consequences of it. I have to look at the bad roads and the crappy playgrounds and all the bad decisions that person made. But if somebody in America, somebody living in Florida, I don't care if maybe they're from here originally, but they're living with their wife and kids in Florida, and they have an Irish passport, and they say, oh, I'll just vote in the Irish local elections, and they elect a councillor, they don't have to live with the consequences of their decision, Niall. They don't have to live in a country. Let's say,
but they will argue.
Let me finish the point. Imagine at the last election, you had a big campaign to let people from overseas vote, and you had a million Americans who decided to vote for the Green Party, and they don't have to live with the consequences of those decisions, but Irish people do, or Irish people living in America don't live with the consequences of those decisions. Is that fair? I don't think it's fair. I think if you're going to vote, you should have to live with the consequences of your vote. And if you don't have to live with the consequences of your vote, bugger off and vote somewhere else where you do have to live with the consequences of your vote.
And you know what? I completely agree with you. But in the absence of impartiality, I'm giving you the alternate argument. And the alternate argument that I've heard from listeners when I've talked about it on the radio is, you know, that they might not always be in Spain. They might not always be in Belgium or in America or whatever it is. And their children may want to move back home. And if it's a referendum or a general election, leaving aside local elections, because you are right, they're more local issues. But leaving aside that, in a general election, it's a 5-year term. They may want to come back during that 5 years. So those things that they vote for may have, you know, an effect on their lives in the next 5 years, or the next generation of their family, or their kids who may want to move back to Ireland. So they'll argue that, you know, they still should have an input into how Ireland is being run.
Yeah, I hear that argument and I sympathise with it, and I still don't agree. Because let's say Grips decided to make me North American correspondent starting in January next year and told me I was going to be living in Washington covering the White House for the next 5 years. Should I then have a vote in the American presidential election because I'll have to live with it next year? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I think if you make a decision to move it to another country at some point in your life, more power to you. That is absolutely your right and decision. But I don't think you should then be voting from overseas.
But we allow foreign people, you know, and people, actually this year they've been plugging it a lot, actually, in relation to Ukrainians and asylum seekers, to vote in Irish elections. Now, I know they can vote in the local elections.
I'd be consistent with you, Niall. I also don't agree with that. Mm. I mean, I think that in the case of, and I mean, I absolutely understand why Ukrainian people are here, and I'm not against them being here, but I don't think they should be voting because they're here on temporary residency, and the idea is that the majority of them will be going home when the war is over. So they also won't be living with the consequences, if everything goes well, of the decisions they make in our local elections. I think there is actually an argument that if you're living here and you're a permanent resident and you're not a citizen, but you're a permanent resident and you do have to live with the consequences you make with the decisions you make in local elections, and that's what the system is based on in theory, there's an argument for that. But this business of letting anybody vote just because they live in the locality and we don't know whether they're here or have a long-term commitment to the country, I don't agree with that either. Mm-hmm. I think voting should primarily be for Irish citizens in Irish elections, and that is the same.
Who are resident in Ireland.
Make the decisions, actually have to live with.
All right, well, listen, John, thank you very much indeed. I hope people find it a little bit clearer now. So basically go down, take the whole tally sheet. By the way, just remind people, in this election in June, you will get two sheets. You'll get one for the local election and one for the European elections. You'll probably see my name probably up the top somewhere because it goes in alphabetical order as far as I know. So I'll be up there with Lynn Boyle and probably Regina Doherty will be after me because she's D. So that's probably the way the ballot sheet will look. You'll see a little photograph of everybody. Be very clear about how you vote. Don't just look at a name. Make sure the photograph tallies with the name, it's the person you recognise, etc, etc. And as John says, the suggestion is go down the sheet and give a preference to those you believe. So if you want me to be elected, obviously vote for me first, but if there's somebody else after me or somebody else after that, you think, well, look, if he doesn't get elected, I'd like him to be elected, go down the sheet. But you don't have to go down it all the way. This idea that the government will get your vote afterwards is simply untrue, and I hope we've made that abundantly clear today. John, thank you very much indeed for coming on, and I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. And you can find more of that information, by the way, if you look at the whole thing that John wrote, which is a great and very interesting piece, it's on Grip Media. It's called The Local and EU Elections, A Guide to Using Your Vote. John, thank you very much indeed.